Hi, I'm Leslie Moody, host of the Set Apart podcast, biblical encouragement for women of all ages. This week, we're continuing with the Historical Mentors series, and I'd like to highlight the life of Lilias Trotter. She is such a beautiful example of a surrendered life, and I'm really excited to unpack some of the principles that have most impacted me as I've studied her life. Before we jump in, I wanted to encourage you to go back and listen to the first few episodes when you have time, if you haven't already caught them. We have been highlighting some women in this series that have been sort of like my historical mentors and spiritual principles that I've learned from their lives. And some of them are women I haven't really talked much about on this podcast before. So I think you'll find that encouraging. Also, if you haven't caught up with our Daily Thunder series, Spiritual Lessons of Black and White America, Eric just wrapped up his last episode recently, and this is such a powerful series. It's so poignant, eye-opening, challenging for Christians living in such a time as this. And I have several guest sessions throughout that series. So just go to Daily Thunder Podcast on your favorite podcast platform, or you can just click the links in this podcast description. Also, check out our Ellerslie Discipleship Training Programs for 2024 if you're looking for a season to come away with Jesus and become immersed in truth. Let's dive into the beauty of a surrendered life, Lilias Trotter's example. Now, just as a quick foundation of who this woman was, she was born in 1853 into a wealthy family in England. She grew up in a very privileged home in London's West End, sort of during that Victorian era. And in that time, there was kind of the fashionable side of London, which was the West End, and then the impoverished side, which was the East End. And she grew up in the West End with all of the privileges that come from being in a wealthy family. She was also a very talented artist, and she was able to meet someone named John Ruskin, who was a very famous art instructor and art critic during that time. And her mother arranged a meeting for her to meet this man, and he wasn't really that excited at first to meet this young girl who supposedly had this art talent. You can just imagine this mother who probably seems fairly meddling to try to get him to meet with her and look at her art. But he said later, "On my somewhat sulky permission, a few were sent," meaning a few of Lilias Trotter's pictures or paintings, "in which I saw she was extremely right-minded and careful in her work." And then they began to develop a friendship. He was a lot older than she was, but he was so taken with her artistic ability and the amazing way that she captured her surroundings in her paintings and the amazing way that she captured nature. And he became convinced that she had a very rare talent. And after they had worked together for a number of years, he said that she could become one of England's greatest living artists. And he said later, "She seemed to learn everything the instant that she was shown it, and ever so much more than what she was taught." He also said to Lilias, "I pause to think how I can convince you of the marvelous gift that is in you." He had championed other famous artists, and he was prepared to do the same for Lilias and help her become a famous artist. So he invited her to spend time in his home in 1879 and really poured a lot of instruction and encouragement and mentoring into her. He told her that a brilliant future was laying before her and that she could do things that would be immortal and actually be one of the greatest living painters that ever existed, because he had so much talent as a teacher and he had so much influence as a cultural leader in that time. He could really launch her career and she could become the type of painter that would go down in the history books. But Lilias had become a very committed Christian during this season of her life, and she was wrestling with this struggle of, do I give myself fully to my art, or do I give myself fully to Christ? Because John Ruskin told her, to become immortal, to become one of the greatest living painters of all time, you will have to give yourself completely over to your art. And she was really shaken by this challenge because she was being pulled into this desire to give her life fully to Jesus, and she felt like those two pursuits were in contrast with each other. She knew that she could use her talent for the glory of God, but could she fully give herself and devote herself to her talent in such a way that that became her all-consuming passion? She wrote this, "At first, I could only rush about in the woods, all in a dream, and it was like a dream for the first day or two. Since then, an almost constant state of suffocation and half intoxication, so that I could hardly eat or sleep except by trusting the Lord about it. After days and days of agonizing over this decision, she came to the very clear conclusion that she could not devote herself both to her art and to her ministry. She wrote, "I see clearly as daylight now. I cannot give myself to painting in the way that he means and continue to seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness." Now, a lot of her friends and family members were very shocked, very disappointed, saddened by her decision, and John Ruskin himself did not really understand why she would give up such an amazing opportunity, because he had helped other people become famous, and he was offering to do the same for her, and who was going to walk away from that kind of opportunity? It's like someone today saying, you know, if you train with me, I can make you into an Olympic gold medalist or a Nobel Prize winner or shape you into a great political leader, the president of the United States, and you're choosing to just walk away from that. But she knew she had a higher calling on her life, and she began to live this poured out life where she would sacrifice everything on behalf of the weak. She spent time at first ministering to women that were in distress on the east end of London and going into actually very dangerous places for this wealthy Victorian woman who had always grown up in privilege and in comfort and protection. She went to where it was actually dangerous, but to reach out to these women who needed help. And then she began to feel God's call to go overseas. And she spent the next four decades of her life pouring out her life in the slums of Algeria. And her ministry work there was really astounding because she was going really unsupported. She didn't have a mission board sending her. She went on her own private funding and didn't really have a lot that she was stepping into there. She had to kind of pave the way and pioneer missionary work on her own there. But really, as one of her biographers says, she spent the rest of her life bringing the light and love of Jesus to the Arab people. When she decided to walk away from her art career and her wealth, she knew that she was giving herself to something better, to a life fully poured out for the glory of God. At the time of her death in 1928, she had established 13 mission stations, which had over 30 workers under the name Algiers Mission Band. And all of her workers were united in their vision to bring the light and knowledge of God and the love of Christ to the people of that land. She did a lot of work with Arab women who were very abused, very oppressed at that time. And she really went anywhere and everywhere. She would travel on a camel through sandstorms to reach remote people with the gospel. During those 40 years, she was really a missionary ahead of her time. She pioneered methods and ways of reaching the Arab people, which in retrospect are considered to have been 100 years ahead of her time. And she wrote some pretty amazing and inspirational books, most notably Parables of the Cross and Parables of the Christ Life. Her biography is captured in a video documentary called Many Beautiful Things, and it is such a well-done and amazing picture of what God can do through a fully surrendered life. So I'd highly recommend that you track down that documentary and spend some time watching. It's definitely very, very edifying and powerful. Lilias gave up three significant things in order to pour her life out for the glory of God, in order to seek first the kingdom of God with all of her heart, soul, mind, and strength. And those three things were marriage, wealth and comfort, and talent and fame. So she could have been married to a wealthy Englishman. She could have lived her entire life in wealth and in comfort, and she could have been one of the most famous painters in her generation. But she had her eyes on a better prize. She was not self-protective. She was self-sacrificing. And one of the quotes that she wrote, which was very inspiring to me, was this: "Holiness, not safety, is the end of our calling. Holiness, not safety, is the end of our calling." And she wasn't looking for a comfortable, easy, self-protective life. She wasn't looking for a life in the spotlight. She was looking for a life lived fully and completely poured out for Jesus Christ. Jim Elliot once said this: "Open my hand to receive the nail of Calvary as Christ was opened. He thought heaven, yea, equality with God, not a thing to be clutched at. So let me release my grasp." And that is really what you see in Lilias Trotter's example, which is this constant surrender. One of the things I love about her biography and what is captured in this documentary about her is that it's very clear that she did not live a secondary, second-rate life when she walked away from all of those things that were sitting right in front of her. She lived a very rich, full, beautiful life. And she even continued to use her art to illustrate what God was doing through her mission work. She was very, very full of the joy of the Lord and the thrill of being his hands and his feet to a lost and dying world. So that is why sort of the subtitle of this episode, the subtitle I think of her life is the beauty of a surrendered heart, the beauty of a surrendered life, because surrender we often think of is something that's going to lead to misery and dullness and depression and just kind of a second-rate version of everything. And yet surrender is what leads to true beauty. And that is what you see in her example. Now, if you take specifically the area of romance, the area of marriage, surrender isn't really a topic that Christians like to apply to that area. It's hard enough to offer our time and our money to God, but when it comes to things like our romantic dreams or our future, our plans, our pursuits, we often cling to those things like a death grip because we feel like we know how our life should turn out. And we so often spend a great deal of time and energy trying to justify our self-gratifying romantic pursuits rather than truly surrendering them to God. In order for our lives to be truly God-honoring and Christ-centered, we have to continually hold every area of our lives with an open hand. Our relationship with Him must always be more important to us than any other earthly relationship or any other pursuit. So I want to look at some ways that we can cultivate a surrendered heart as Lilias Trotter did. One of the most baffling statements that Jesus ever made was, "If anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple." So here is the same Bible that tells us to honor our father and mother and respect our husband and love our children seems to be saying that we cannot follow Christ fully unless we hate, quote unquote, our own family members. But the reality is he's not calling us to hate them. He's calling us not to place anything, any relationship or any pursuit in our life above Jesus Christ. Even the good and perfect gifts that he's given us, such as marriage, family, material possessions, or talents. And it's not that Lilias could not have lived an upright Christian life and pursued her art talent and lived in the West End of London. It's just that she knew God was calling her to lay all of that down, surrender to him, and that he wanted to show her a better plan for her life. She was laying down the good in order to choose his best. So there was nothing evil or wrong about her lifestyle or about her art, but she knew he had something more for her, and that flowed out of a heart of surrender. It's so obvious as you look all throughout Scripture that we are never to put a higher priority on our marriage and family or on our talents or on our possessions than we do upon Jesus Christ. Now, if you just take the area of romance and relationships, during our single years, it's really tempting to both idolize and idealize marriage hopes and dreams, thinking that we'll finally be happy once we meet Prince Charming, once we settle down. That's a very dangerous mindset because it keeps us from finding the perfect satisfaction in Jesus Christ that he intends us to have right now. And if we expect marriage to solve the deepest needs within our soul, it's only going to be placing unhealthy, unrealistic expectations on our future husband and harming our marriage in the process. And we've talked about that in other episodes. The same thing goes for talents and future dreams and ideals. Lilias Trotter gave up the opportunity to become a famous painter, to be known as one of the greatest living painters of her generation. And yet, if she had kind of thought the way the world thinks, it's like, oh, that is the obvious path for me. That is what will bring me joy. That is what will bring me satisfaction and fulfillment. And the fact that she had the grace to see beyond that, to see a better prize, she valued these souls of these neglected, forgotten, and oppressed women in the backside of Algeria, the remotest part of Algeria, more than her own fame and prestige as an artist. And that's thinking and reasoning with heaven's values in view. It's so important to realize that when we walk that closely with Christ, no matter what he asks us to give up, we have everything we need for happiness right now, whether married or single, whether in plenty or in want, whether fulfilling our personal dreams or not. God, of course, puts a high value on marriage, on family relationships, on talents and gifts, because those are things that he gives us to bless and to use for his glory. But we have to be careful that we do not put any of those things on a pedestal or put our contentment on hold until those dreams become a reality, and also that we're willing to hold them with an open hand so that if God asks for them, we willingly give them. And so often when God asks us for the most precious things in our lives, he does so that he can richly richly bless us beyond what we could ever hope or imagine. I know for me in my younger years, when I walked away from the dating game, I really thought that my best chances of being married to someone that I really cared about and really wanted to build a life with was for me to take matters into my own hands and date around and try to find the right guy. God asked me to lay that down and just trust him in that area of my life. And that was very difficult for me because I thought, well, he can't do a better job than me. I know what I'm looking for in a spouse. And yet he did have plans for me that were exceedingly abundantly beyond all that I could hope for or imagine. But I had to first lay down my agenda, my dreams, and my hopes so that he could bring that blessing into our life. When the gaze of our soul does not remain fixed upon Jesus Christ, then even good desires, such as having a beautiful godly love story or using our talents for the glory of God, can become unhealthy preoccupations or idols in our life before we realize what has even happened. Our God-given desire for marriage, for family, and for success can become an obsession in our life and a replacement for Jesus Christ. Often, the biggest threats to seeking Christ with an undivided heart are not overtly sinful things that are obviously sinful, but good and God-given gifts and desires that subtly start to claim too much of our focus and attention. I think about what Lilias Trotter would have been if she had listened to John Ruskin. And if you watch her documentary and read her biography, you realize that he was pressuring her even after she gave everything up and went to the mission field. He continued to kind of guilt trip her into feeling like she had given up something really valuable and chosen something lesser, and just constantly reminding her, you know, you could have been amazing. You could have been the best painter in your generation. Why are you choosing this odd way? But one thing that you notice is that when Jesus becomes the focus of your life and the ultimate desire of your heart, you begin to desire things that are very different than what the world desires. She didn't actually have the longing to be a famous painter. She had the longing to reach these unreached men and women for the gospel of Jesus Christ because she knew that that was going to have far more eternal value than any painting that she ever painted. And so she was very happy and fulfilled, even though her path looked very different than the one that seemed like it would have brought fulfillment. One of the most convicting statements that Lilias Trotter wrote in one of her books was this: "Never has it been so easy to live in half a dozen harmless worlds at once. Art, music, social sciences, games, motoring, the following of some profession, and so on. And between them, we run the risk of drifting about the good, hiding the best. Dare to have it out with God and ask him to show you whether or not all is focused on Christ and his glory. Turn your soul's vision to Jesus and look at him, and a strange dimness will come over all that is apart from him." She saw so clearly that when we get consumed with the things of this earth, no matter how good they may seem, the good can easily hide the best. When we are willing to have it out with God, as she says, and let him really show us if everything in our life is focused on him and his glory, and that becomes our primary pursuit, a strange dimness will come over all that is not of him, that is not a part of him. And those were the words that actually inspired the hymn, "Turn your eyes upon Jesus, look full in his wonderful face, and the things of earth will grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace." That is what you see in her life because she no longer desired the things that the rest of the world was chasing after. She had found a better prize to live for, to fix her gaze upon. One of the ways that you can tell that you're clinging too tightly to things outside of Christ, and maybe they're becoming idols in your life, is first, you can't imagine giving it up. You might have thoughts like, if I lost this relationship or this career path or this opportunity, I'd be miserable and depressed. Or if I don't get married or I don't get this chance to do such and such, life won't really feel like it's worth living. When you start to have those thoughts, it's a really good signal that it's time to regroup and say, "Lord, show me if I am clinging to anything more tightly than you." Because remember, Jesus is our all in all. He is our ultimate satisfaction. He is the God of all comforts. And until we are satisfied in him, we will never be satisfied with anything else in our life. Another warning sign that something may be an idol in your life is that you spend more time and energy on that area than you do on your relationship with Christ. And that is what Lilias Trotter was talking about in that quote: "Between all of those things that we fill our lives with, we run the risk of drifting about the good, hiding the best. So if we're spending our time and our energy on our social life, on social media, on trying to find the right guy to marry, on trying to pursue a specific career path or get doors of opportunity to open, and that's where our focus is, and we have very little time or energy left over for our relationship with Christ, that is a warning sign that that area of our life has become too consuming, and we need to regroup and say, Lord, turn my eyes upon Jesus so that the things of this earth will grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace. Another warning sign is that you might find more delight and happiness in that area of your life than you do in your relationship with Christ. Lily has found great delight in her talent that God had given her of painting, but she learned how to be even more satisfied in Jesus Christ, and therefore God could use that gift to his glory without it becoming the thing that identified her and brought her the most happiness. He was always the deepest satisfaction of her soul. It's not wrong if earthly relationships or earthly accomplishments or pursuits bring a certain level of satisfaction or happiness into our lives, but make sure that Jesus is always your source of deepest satisfaction. A great way to determine whether you're really surrendered to Christ, whether you're really finding your fulfillment in him, is to ask yourself the question, if this relationship or romantic dream were suddenly stripped away from me, would Jesus be enough? And if you can't honestly answer that question, yes, he would be enough, then rethink how you are spending your time, where you are placing your affections, and ask him to refocus you on eternity, on living for him alone, on finding your satisfaction in him, on fully surrendering to the one who gave everything for you. Here are some final thoughts that I want to share. If anything in your life, whether it's a talent or pursuit, if it's possessions, if it's a relationship, has claimed more of your affection and focus than Jesus Christ, I challenge you to ask God to redirect your affection and change your heart. I challenge you to freshly surrender whatever this area of your life is and every area of your life to him again and lay those things at his feet. And remember where the deepest source of fulfillment is truly found, in Jesus. There is no better place for your most precious dreams than at the nail-scarred feet that were pierced for you. I hope you've enjoyed this week's episode. If you'd like to learn more about living a Christ-centered life, I invite you to visit us at setapart.org and look at the many resources that we have for you there. I pray you have a blessed and Christ-centered week.